Hello and welcome to the first installment of Inside Network Marketing, the podcast. It's February 7th, 2009, and this is your host for the show, and for every show actually, Len Clements. I am the founder and CEO of MarketWave Incorporated. Been doing this full-time for about 19 years now. MarketWave is a research and analysis and kind of watchdog and advocacy and consulting organization. We do a lot of things here. If you'd like some more information about me and why I'm doing this show and why I'm anyone you should give any credence to as far as my opinions or observations or information I provide you, since I'm not that great at self-aggrandizing, just go to MarketWaveInc.com and look at the About Len section, and you can see my curriculum vitae there, which is a fancy, pretentious way of saying resume. And you can see all of the things that I've done in the industry as far as MarketWave is concerned. And also, you'll find there some of a list of the expert witness testimony that I've given. I will just say the one thing, which is I am a court-certified expert in the field of network marketing. I'm one of only about a handful of those that are actively practicing in the United States today. And now anybody can call themselves an expert, of course, but court-certified means you've actually testified in jury trials, and the opposing counsel has beat you up and explained to the judge why you shouldn't be an expert, and the judge has made the decision you are an expert, which is kind of tough to do in a profession where they don't have college degrees in it. It takes a lot to kind of convince the judge that you're an expert in this particular field, but apparently I've done enough to accomplish that. So anyway, check it out, MarketWaveInc.com, and look at my resume there if you want to know about all that kind of stuff. And this is actually kind of an offshoot of a show that I used to do on a real radio station, KSEO, out of Santa Cruz, back several years ago. They had a show called Inside Network Marketing that I did from 11 to noon every Sunday, a live call-in radio show, and I actually apparently had a fan. People would call in, and we would discuss network marketing issues and newsworthy items and so forth, kind of like what this show is going to do. I kind of liken myself as sort of a minor league level to the Wally Pipp of MLM radio. You may recall, some of you guys are sports fans, Wally Pipp was the first baseman for the New York Yankees back in the 20s, and one day he was having just a few aches and pains, nothing that really should have kept him out of the lineup, no broken bones or anything, but he asked for the day off, actually a few games off, to kind of just recuperate, and they gave it to him, and they put a young kid that was just on the bench at the time, just moving up into his position, who had the name of Lou Gehrig. And that was obviously the end of Wally Pipp's career as a first baseman, at least a starting first baseman for the New York Yankees. And then Lou Gehrig went on to actually at one time hold the record for most consecutive games played, over 2,000. Well, I, at one point, asked for a couple of weeks off of my radio show, so I could go off and do some other projects that I was working on. And in my absence, they replaced me with a psychic, a radio call-in psychic. When I came back, they said, we are going to keep the psychic. So what was left of my ego then went on to do more of an online newsletter type of a thing. So now I'm back to doing a podcast. So yeah, so I got bumped by a psychic. I want to give you a quick overview of what kind of show I'm going to be doing here, get some house cleaning out of the way, and then we're actually going to just dive right in and get to some newsworthy items out there and some commentary that I want to do. The first reason why I'm doing this, by the way, is because I'm a two-finger typer. Well, the thumb for the space bar. Other than that, I use my two index fingers. Actually got up to 35 words per minute in college on those two fingers, but that's about where I topped out. So the alerts that I send out by email, for those of you who subscribe to the alerts, those take a long time when you're a two-finger typer who isn't doing 35 words a minute anymore. Plus, a lot of the commentary and stuff, I can say in 5 minutes what takes me 30 minutes to type. So I just figured, you know what, I'm going to start just saying these alerts rather than type them out. You'll still get the alerts, of course, with just the basic information about the newsworthy event. It'll probably direct you to an upcoming podcast to hear all the commentary. By the way, if you haven't figured it out by now, if anybody is going to do any kind of a, not that you would, but if you're going to do some kind of a drinking game with this show, like, you know, you take a shot every time I say pyramid or, you know, MLM or something like that, that might work. But if you're going to take a shot every time I say or you know, you're probably going to be in a coma suffering from alcohol poisoning before the show is even half over. So I won't recommend you do that. Something I'm kind of working on as far as my speaking style. So, that's how that is. So, part of this show is going to be called The Kitchen. I'm going to be looking forward to doing the kitchen segment. The kitchen is, as if you can't take the heat, stay out of. So, the interview segments, and people can call in, and I'm going to be doing interviews in that segment, and there's going to be no ambiguity here. This is going to be take the gloves off, no holds barred. I get to ask whatever I want. That's why it's called the kitchen, and the object is going to see if I can turn up the heat and get them out of it. So they are going to know coming in that I don't want anybody to say I ambushed them or anything. So I'm going to ask a lot of tough questions. A lot of this, of course, is going to be as a result of commentary I probably do on the show, and people are going to want to come on and defend themselves. Hey, by all means, let's do it. My greatest goal here, the biggest get I could get, is probably one of these anti-MLM zealots out there that I've been trying to debate for many years. I've tried to debate online for many years, and of course that never works. So supposedly, I don't want to mention any names yet, but I've tentatively a couple of them online have agreed to actually come on this show and debate me live. I suspect once these shows are started and they see that it's really going to happen, they'll back out, as they almost always do. But if I can get one of them on the show, I do look forward to it. Because I also want to have some pro network marketers on here. I'm pro MLM overall. I've made my living at it, obviously, for 19 years. But I do want to practice some tough love now and then. This is an industry that is certainly not perfect. And I think we need to talk about some of the challenges that we have in the industry. So much of this industry is about, you know, don't expose our distributors and prospects to the negativity. Don't talk about the bad things that are going on, because we don't want them to, you know, to get a bad impression or to have their enthusiasm dampened or anything. But then I kind of look at it like, well, if nobody admits it's broke, who's going to fix it? You know, somebody has to recognize here's where the challenges are and here's some things we should do to maybe fix this. So I may tend to kind of dwell on the negative a little bit, only because there's just nobody else doing it. Somebody needs to recognize some of the things that some of the challenges that we need to address here. So, but again, there's obviously going to be a lot of pro network marketing influence on this show as well too. I want to get MLM leaders and corporate and things like that. There's a couple of leaders in corporate I would like to get into the kitchen and ask them to some tough questions too. Maybe even some government regulators. Tentatively, and this was several months ago before I got this show going, there was somebody from the FDA, at least said by email, that she would be interested in coming on. So hopefully she's still interested in doing that. We'll see how that goes. But anyway, we've got a lot of stuff to get to here, so let's just dive right in. I'm going to try to keep these shows to under an hour, and I'm sure I'm going to try to cram as much in as I can in this first show as I can get to. So we're probably not going to get to everything, but hey, we'll just do another one. A couple of little minor issues I want to get out of the way here first. One was just something just came across my desk today. It's from todayonline.com. It's a situation over in Singapore, I believe it is, where the reporter here, and this is a mainstream news source over there in Singapore, talking about a multi-level marketing company, they even refer to it as MLM, parenthetically, called Sunshine Empire, that was just shut down for being an illegal pyramid. And it was an illegal pyramid. This was a company that was selling what they called gold packages worth about $11,000 each. A lot of what they offered was financial advice, investment advice, things like that. You know, it really was a pyramid scheme, but the point here is that how the media refers to it as a multi-level marketing company or a multi-level marketing scheme. It's just interesting to me how when pyramid schemes disguise themselves as network marketing companies to try to appear legal, which is why they do that, when they get exposed as not being legal network marketing companies and being illegal pyramids instead, the media always still continues to refer to them as multi-level marketing companies. I mean, think about that. If, let's say Bernie Madoff was, you know, he was a financial or investment consultant or advisor. That's what he was referred to for many years. Now he's the perpetrator of a Ponzi scheme. Like, he's no longer referred to as a legitimate, you know, investment advisor, you know, financial consultant. They've changed his identity to the thing that we now find out he really is. I mean, imagine if you were, a doctor or a lawyer, or pretending to be. Then they found out that you didn't really have a medical license, or you didn't, you know, really, you never passed the bar exam. What would the media still refer to you as a doctor or a lawyer? No, they would refer to you as someone who was pretending to be a doctor or a lawyer. You were fraudulently imitating a doctor or a lawyer. They would stop calling you doctor or lawyer. But only in network marketing, for some reason, when pyramid schemes get exposed as such, and they tried to pass themselves off as MLM, the media still just goes right on calling them MLM. So there's another one. There's many examples of that out there. Yeah, I just got a press release here from the Federal Trade Commission. I'm on their mailing list. And it's just a few days ago, it looks like they've filed charges against the marketers of the Kanoki foot pads. Now, I knew this was inevitable. This was something that I've actually been seeing out there for years. Back when I had a network marketing company, I had someone come by my office to try to pitch us on this technology, they called it, to see if we would add that kind of product to our line. We didn't. because I knew it was a fraudulent scam even back then. And just recently, I don't recall the name off the top of my head, but I just saw a startup company out there that was offering this as one of their products. These are the pads where, you know, there's like an herbal, dried herbal leaves of some kind inside of a some type of a cloth pack, and you tape it to the bottom of your foot overnight and wake up the next morning and it's all like dark brown and black, and that's it's absorbing all of the toxins out of your body through the bottom of your feet, and this helps prevent and treat all these various diseases. Of course, if you take any kind of dried leaf and you rehydrate it, it tends to turn dark brown or black or whatever the original color was, and that's all that was happening there. Just the moisture from your feet was making it change color. But they were saying it was drawing all of these, you know, the heavy metals and toxins out of your body through the bottom of your feet. Well, anyway, the FTC has finally said that that was, of course, a deceptive trade practice. It was a fraud. They're seeking to actually completely shut them down and also pay a consumer redress of getting all of the people who bought it their money back. So good for the FTC on that one. I think it was a good decision. Also, just big kind of somewhat breaking news here, at least as of today when I'm recording this, which is, as I said, is Saturday the 7th of February. It looks like just a couple of days ago, the company Zrii, that's Z-R-I-I, kind of had a meltdown, as it was referred to in the Salt Lake City Tribune yesterday, where about the top 35 employees, they claim, all just kind of got up and left and resigned, and seven of the top distributors were terminated. This was... There's kind of a whole soap opera going on here, and I don't really know all the details, so I don't want to comment on a lot of it until I've really kind of heard both sides of the story. So far, I've heard it from, you know, separately from afar. Pretty much it looks like what's going on here is that several of the top distributors in the field went to Bill Farley, the CEO of the company, and what it appears to me, based on what I've seen so far, preliminary, I guess, analysis of what's going on, is they kind of extorted him and said, you know, leave the company and turn it over to us or we're all going to quit. And all these employees are going to resign and so forth. And he refused, of course. He didn't accept that offer. The interesting thing, though, is that based on their public statements and the press releases they're putting out, they claim that Mr. Farley had, I'm quoting here, saddled the company with unnecessary debt while using it as his own personal piggy bank. They're also concerned, I guess, about some of his personal and professional relationships, whatever that means. Of course, you leave ambiguous sort of open-ended things like that out there, and your imagination will always make it 10 times worse than it really is, which anytime I see that, it always kind of makes me wonder, well, then why didn't you get into specifics? You know, it's almost like the specifics maybe wouldn't have been egregious enough. Because in a case like this, where you're threatening the company and you're trying this hostile takeover attempt of it, I would think you would want publicly for everyone to know some good reasons, you know, why you're doing this. All I can see so far is they said that there's some allegations here that he changed the compensation plan in some way that didn't benefit the distributors, and he was using a lot of the company funds for himself and just things like that. This company, by the way, was launched in May of 08. It's a relatively new company. This is the one that Deepak Chopra, you know, was endorsing their product. And apparently they had a great first year, a very successful launch. They've alleged to have over 70,000 distributors already after just a little less than a year. Kind of hard to believe, but if that's true, that would have been a really great year. The thing is that when you have distributors, and they're just distributors, coming into the company and saying, you know, resign and let somebody else take control of this company or let us take control of this company without any kind of forewarning. And Mr. Farley, in his public address earlier today to the field, claimed he was completely blindsided by this. He had no idea any of this was coming. He just came home from the airport, went to the office, and all the corporate employees were gone. And he was getting these messages from the leaders and eventually a letter making this like hostile takeover attempt, kind of a demand letter. And actually, here's about a one-minute snippet of that 17-minute or so public address by Mr. Farley, and you can hear it for yourself.
Mine, though, let me try to give you a little background on, frankly, some almost bizarre things that have happened this week, which come to me as a total surprise and shock. You know, I regularly make visits to Salt Lake City to visit with the management team, and as part of those visits, we go over budgets and sales and forecasts and of course, so many other business issues. So I arrive at the Salt Lake Airport as per my schedule Monday morning of this week. It seems like a long time ago, but it's just several days. When I arrived at the airport, there was a voicemail for me, and it was from Kirby. And he said, Bill, I'd like to meet with you. The management team and some of the top distributors would like to meet with you this afternoon. And if you could bring your attorney with you, that would be helpful. And he was not at the airport to pick me up, which he had done for the past year. So needless to say, I was surprised. In fact, really surprised. So I managed to get a ride from somebody else to over to the offices. And when I arrived at the offices, there was no one here. No one. Well, can you imagine? I mean, no one.
Again, not having hearing from both sides. Now, I would tend to believe him only because if you had made ongoing, consistent efforts to change things, in other words, if this group of distributors and these corporate people had met with Mr. Farley several times and said, you know, first you ask and you say, this is what we would really like you to do or stop doing, and then if it doesn't happen, then you start demanding, you get a little more forceful, and then if he still doesn't stop doing it, then you threaten to resign if this doesn't get fixed, and if it still happens, then you resign. That would be the proper way, I think, to go through that process. Now, if they had done that, I would think they would be making that public. They'd be making a point of mentioning that, hey, we've been working hard with him for a long time. We've met with him before, trying to get him to change his ways in some way. But instead, there's no mention of that at all. It's just it is like it was sort of just out of the blue. So I would tend to believe at this point, again, not having heard directly from both sides, which always tends to change my views a little bit once that happens, but I would think that he's probably accurate and that he was completely blindsided by this, which smacks more of like a hostile takeover attempt, like a coup of some kind, or almost like a kind of like an extortion plot. You know, why would you not have given him the opportunity to change certain things first before you just come out of nowhere and say, give us the company or we're gone? In the public letter, the press release, and the actual copy of the letter that these core distributors, remember, these are top distributors now. They're called co-founders because they were founding distributors, but these are not corporate people. In the letter that they sent out, you know, they said things like, you know, as a trusted steward of this opportunity, we cannot allow this to happen. As a trusted stewards of this opportunity. Top distributors are not trusted stewards of the opportunity. They're independent contractors. They're distributors. Your corporate leaders are the trusted stewards of this opportunity. And if you are calling yourself trusted and stewards of the opportunity, then why are you also claiming, and again, I'm quoting from the letter, it says, if there exists even a thread of decency in your character, you will honor this request. They're calling it a request, by the way, not a demand. Like when you say, like, do it or we leave, do it or we'll destroy your company, that's not a request. I'll go on. It is the right thing to do. Should you choose to reject our request, we will be forced to dismantle the entire field leader by leader and take our talents to another network marketing company. In all practicality, once that process begins, Zhri will cease to exist within 30 days. Additionally, we will be further motivated to pursue any and all legal claims against you personally for lost compensation. The absurdity of that statement, I think, stands on its face. And it's like we're going to leave and then destroy our incomes and then, I guess, sue him because we destroyed our own incomes by leaving. But again, if you're the trusted stewards of the opportunity, then you don't leave and openly admit within 30 days that will destroy the company. I mean, think about that. If, by the way, a lot of these leaders also came from Synergy before this and, you know, left them and moved their group over to here. I would wonder who would want these guys now? Like whatever company they move to, think about that. If they're claiming that we have the power, we have enough of these distributors under us who will follow us where we could wreck your company, why would any distributor want someone who would do that, who in fact has already done it, to assume that kind of power in their company? I'm not really sure if they've thought this through here. But anyway, like I said, on the surface, I'm kind of leaning toward corporate on this one, and I don't normally do that. I'm more of a distributor fan. I've heard both sides, at least what they've put out there publicly, and I don't like what I see. I don't like the way this was handled at all from a distributor level. And hopefully, if I can arrange it, I'd like to get any of them to come on the show. You can call into the show, and we can discuss it. and see where that goes. But again, this is all just kind of hit, so it should be kind of interesting to see what happens. Unfortunately, as I'm sure a lot of you in this business know, network marketing distributors as a group are a pretty fickle, flighty bunch of people, and we tend to spook easily. You know, every little bump in the road is Mount Everest. Every little puff of smoke is a mushroom cloud. So things like this, I mean, even had they not left and they had instigated some kind of corporate shakeup with Mr. Farley leaving, that's the kind of thing that destroys a company anyway. You would completely destroy the confidence and the morale on the field when you do something like that. So, again, I don't really think they've thought this through or really understand the psychology of network marketers. And you think if they're leaders at the top of a 70,000 group organization, they would understand that just the threat alone is almost the equivalent of the carrying out of that threat. Unfortunately, I suspect this is not going to bode well for the future of Zhree, simply because of that reason. I mean, who's going to have the confidence to really dive in and build this right now with all of this going on? I wish them luck. I hope that they get past it. One thing, of course, is the flip side to that is this industry does have a very short attention span, has a very short-term memory. You know, if they can survive this, I would say for at least the next 6 months, they'll eventually get past it, and I hope they do. One other issue I want to get into before I get into the main topic for this particular show, I want to go into a lot of detail about what's going on with YTB Travel, because that's kind of pertinent right now. I think it's a great case study for what really defines the delineation between a legal network marketing company and what could be considered an illegal pyramid scheme. They have a lawsuit against them right now by the state of California, the Attorney General. So we're not talking about, you know, a little state you could do without. It's the state that could kill you if they shut you down there. But they've declared them a pyramid scheme, and in September there's going to be a trial to see if they really are or not. I'm going to tell you why I think they might be. And again, I don't like companies being declared pyramid schemes that appear to be network marketing companies, but I kind of think, in my case, my attorney has always said that I can't say things are pyramid schemes or legal or illegal. I don't have the ability to do that. But I can say that in my layman's opinion, they're legally vulnerable. That was the line I was given. So I think YTB Travel, in my layman's opinion, is legally vulnerable. So I'll explain in detail why when we come back from the break, which will be coming up here. And before that, though, I want to get into something called network marketing prejudice or network marketing bigotry. And I'm going to give you some kind of scary examples of who out there that we are all, a lot of us are working with, who think that we should be illegal or are illegal or don't support us. Like Verizon, PayPal, LinkedIn, companies like that. You know, are we working with any of those people? Well, guess what? They forbid advertising or any type of network marketing companies. They liken us to the exact same thing as a legal pyramid scheme. So I'll give you some more detail about that and what's going on with them and who some good guys are out there that we should feel comfortable working with that actually do support us. We'll do that right after the break. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Since 1992, Telecenter has been the ultimate lead capture and communication tool for direct sales professionals. Telecenter is a toll-free number you will use in all of your advertising to provide 24/7 recorded information about your company, products, and opportunity. As prospects listen to the pre-recorded messages, the system pre-qualifies them for you and then instantly notifies you via text, phone, and email. The constant flow of fresh, qualified leads will drive momentum into your business. Telecenter even captures every caller's phone number, their name and address when available, serves as a 24/7 fax system, provides a 25-user conference bridge, an ad tracker to define your best advertising responses, and so much more. With a simple flat rate price, over 35 included features, and no service contract, Telecenter is the right choice for successful direct sellers. Learn more and sign up online now by going to www.telecentersignup.com/marketwave or by finding the Telecenter banner in the MLM resources section of marketwaveinc.com.
Imagine tapping into an endless supply of free leads on the internet. Imagine being able to pick and choose who you talk to while completely eliminating rejection from the process. My name is Max Steingart, and if you have an hour a day, I can show you how to add a new client, customer, or distributor to your business every day. To learn more, go to www.maxsteingart.com and you'll receive a copy of my best-selling training, Words to Wealth. I can help you eliminate all of the barriers to your success. Go to www.maxsteingart.com.
Welcome back to the second half of Inside Network Marketing. Again, this is your host, Len Clements. And if you've just, I was about to say, if you just joined us, but that's my old radio habits coming back again. If this was a live radio show, then you might have just joined us in progress. It's a podcast, which means you probably started from the beginning. You can rewind anything you want. That's another thing I'm going to have to learn to do is stop repeating phone numbers and URLs and things like that over and over so you can hear them several times, write them down. You can always just rewind the podcast, so only got to say it once. But before I go on, I wanted to just make one follow-up point I was thinking about concerning this Ree situation, and we'll get back into this about MLM bigotry and YDB travel. You know, I had lunch yesterday. I had a great lunch with a good friend of mine, Julie Abizera, who, by the way, wrote the book The Journey. And you can check out her book at marketwaveinc.com in the resources section, which I only have to mention once because you can always just rewind that, hear it again. But we were talking about exorbitant CEO salaries. And then we were talking about some CEOs and senior management of some network marketing companies that I thought maybe they were overpaid or, you know, I mean, do they really need like $30, $40 million or whatever their, you know, their top salaries might be? I don't know if it's that much, but, you know, some of them make several million dollars. And I think, you know, what if you had an MLM CEO that was making, you know, even a couple of million, and he or she could survive on $1 million, and that other million could go into the comp plan or something? Well, actually, Julie made a good point, which was if their company is growing and it's successful and they're moving product on time, they're paying commissions on time, the commissions are accurate, you know, the website's working, you know, the distributor's getting pretty much, you know, everything that they need to succeed. Like a company that did 70,000 distributors in less than their first year would seem to be doing, like Ree allegedly has done. You know, so what? What they earn? You know, I mean, distributors are getting what they asked for. They're getting what was promised to them as far as the tools and the technologies and the products and so forth. So good for them. Let them go ahead and make their money. So I look back now and I think, you know, one of the accusations against Mr. Farley was that he was somehow using it as his own little personal piggy bank. I guess he was padding his own income somehow or taking money out for himself or whatever. First of all, we have no idea if that's true or not. I'm sure that will all come out in disclosures when the lawsuits start flying back and forth, which inevitably I have no doubt that they will. A lot of attorneys on both sides already seem to be involved. So, of course, that's going to happen, and we'll all find out the true story eventually somewhere down the line. But, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, guys, if the products were going out on time and they were good products and the compensation plan was paying on time and your checks were right, the websites were working, the orders were getting processed correctly, if, you know, just do your job. I mean, couldn't you just do your job? I mean, does the personal life of the CEO really have a bearing? I mean, you could rationalize it because, like, you're just so also noble that maybe something he's doing in his personal life offends you and you just couldn't support that. I don't know. I don't know. Something's not sitting right with me on this one. Something's just not sitting right. It's that spider sense is tingling here. I've learned the hard way in this business to always get both sides of the story before you comment, because a lot of times I've done this and end up sticking the foot in my mouth because I hear the other side and realize, there was more to the story. I got a feeling that there's, of course, more to this story, obviously, and there's both sides to every story, and the truth's probably somewhere in the middle. I got a feeling the truth's going to be slightly more to the corporate side on this one. Like I said, we'll see. All I know is that it sure seemed like this company was doing well, and you know, they were paying checks and moving product. So, I don't know. That's, as far as distributors would be concerned, I would think, you know, let the company, let the corporate be the trusted stewards of all of that and just keep doing your job. But we will, in a future show, we're not going to have time for this one, but kind of get into some of the motivation. And I have no idea if that's what's going on here, but, you know, why top leaders from companies move from company to company? You know, like Randy Schroeder recently left Agile and went to Mona V, and now we've got another guy by the name of Robert Dean, who's one of the top distributors for Tishinoni, just left and went to, guess where, Mona V. Whereas some top Amway diamonds recently left Amway and went to, guess where, Mona V. Now, in the case of at least Mr. Dean and the Amway people, we know, because it's been made public and there's been admissions to the fact that they were paid large sums to move over. Randy Schroeder completely denies that he was received any compensation at all to walk away from what would have been the largest group in Agile to start over with Monavie. But anyway, that'll be a discussion for another show. But there often is both a carrot and a stick to that decision. It's not just a stick. So, like I said, there's what's called discovery in all lawsuits, when everything has to come out, and we'll eventually get to the bottom of exactly what went on there with Zree at some point. Probably months from now, but we'll eventually get it. Okay, MLM bigotry. Here's what I mean by that. I recently got a new cell phone and signed up with Verizon, and I got the detailed disclosures here about, you know, their policies and procedures and their terms and things like that. And I just happened to be looking over what their guidelines were for something called PIC codes. That's the first thing I looked at. Now, PIC codes are those five-digit numbers that you can just type into a cell phone to receive information, or maybe, you know, to vote for somebody on American Idol or whatever you want to do. You know, those are called PIC codes. And Verizon limits the type of advertising and promotion and marketing and information that can be supplied using these PIC codes. And I got a list of bullet points here from Verizon describing the types of businesses, the types of content that they will not allow to be used over the Verizon service. Now, not just PIC codes now. This is basically over the Verizon service using their technology. Like, for example, here's the first one. Anything that is obscene or indecent or that contains strong sexual, explicit, or erotic themes. Okay, I'll buy that one. No problem with that one so far. There's a whole page of them here. How about this next one? Products or sites depicting or providing how-to materials about pedophilia or other non-consensual contact. I definitely agree with that one. 100%. No problem there. Products or sites that suggest the availability of prostitution services. Okay, so far we're 3 for 3. Products or sites that advocate, glorify, or promote rape, torture, cannibalism, suffering, or death. I got to say, I completely agree with that one, too. So far, Verizon and I, we're completely together. I completely agree that in spite of the First Amendment argument and freedom of speech and all that kind of stuff, you know, you can't say fire in a crowded theater. There's a line there somewhere, and I think all of these go over the line. All right, so we're perfectly fine. How about this one? Products or sites that appear to facilitate or promote the evasion of laws. That's a pretty broad and general one, but basically don't do anything illegal over it. And they give you some examples, like radar detectors, satellite descramblers, things like that. Well, yeah, you don't want to sell illegal stuff over it, so far there. Trivializes historic events such as the Holocaust, the Irish Famine, or September 11th. Being a diehard libertarian, I'd kind of say that maybe we're pushing that, like, freedom of speech, First Amendment thing a little bit there, but my gut just tells me I agree with that. Let's just use some common sense. It's good that they don't allow that. Products or sites of questionable legality, which kind of is redundant with the previous one, but this time they give examples like miracle cures, cancer cures, things like that, no problem. Hate speech, defamatory, libelous, or threatening sites, extreme profanity, depictions of or designed to facilitate alcohol abuse or illegal drug use. All of these I completely agree with. But then we get to the one here that says multi-level marketing schemes. Now, not pyramid schemes, that's a whole separate bullet point. Okay, separate from that, they list, and only this, multi-level marketing schemes. Separate and distinct from illegal pyramids. So if your cell phone service is using Verizon, and you're a professional network marketer, this is the industry that you're choosing to make your living in, or hopefully you will be making your living in, might want to reconsider, as I have, supporting Verizon. If they think that the industry that I'm in, that I'm proud of, that I make my living at, is in somehow in the same league as pedophilia and cannibalism, then I don't think I want to do business with Verizon anymore, and I'm in the process of changing my service provider. PayPal. Now, that might be one that's a little tougher for some of us to drop, because I'm sure we do a lot of business with PayPal. I unfortunately can't completely drop them because I can't stop how people send me money. And if that's how they do it, I got to accept it. But I tell you, I ain't sending any more money out through PayPal. I'm going to do everything I possibly can in both directions to give PayPal as little business as possible. The reason for that is because they also have guidelines that basically define who can use PayPal. What types of companies or products or marketing schemes can use PayPal to collect money. And they have an entire section, you can go online and check this out, about multi-level marketing, pyramid, and matrix programs. They define multi-level marketing as including any business in which, I'm quoting now, a person receives proceeds from his or her own sales of goods or services, or recruited members, or any combination thereof. And they're actually talking about not purchases by distributors. They are acknowledging sales to others, right? That's still part of their description. Similarly, PayPal prohibits, as a multi-level marketing plan, any business in which payouts occur at two or more levels, and PayPal prohibits multi-level marketing plans whether or not they are legal under the laws of one or more states. They're flat out saying that even if it's declared legal in all 50 states and on a federal level and in 18 other freaking countries and for the last 72 years, doesn't make any difference, PayPal doesn't care, we're not going to do business with you. That's essentially what they're saying. And down there they actually have a bullet point of types of programs, of what they determine to be these types of programs, pyramid schemes or multi-level marketing schemes. For example, here's one of the factors that they look for. Members' profits are derived from recruiting new members. So far, that would be a pyramid, so I'm fine with that. Or from the sales of newly recruited members downline rather than their own sales. Sales from or from the sales of newly recruited members. Not the purchases. Sales to others. Here's another factor they look for. Percentage of the company's goods sold by non-distributors. Okay, think about that. Sold by non-distributors. In other words, PayPal doesn't even know what the most basic fundamental definition is of a network marketing company. Non-distributors don't sell the product. They would only be customers. So anyway, that's PayPal. Now, it's interesting that I thought, well, PayPal won't accept any business with multi-level marketing companies, even though I've seen a number of companies out there that accept PayPal, like I believe Zengo accepts PayPal. And I just found out here just about 4 or 5 weeks ago, there was a press release put out by Amway announcing that they are now accepting PayPal as a method for transactions. So I see PayPal is going to completely trash multi-level marketing and basically say, even if you're legal, we still not going to do business with you. Unless you're a really big company that can make us a lot of money, we'll make an exception. Then we'll do business with you. But notice, I mean, I wonder if companies like Amway, who are making this big announcement that PayPal is now going to do business with them, knows that PayPal is so anti-multi-level marketing. Has anyone ever made them aware of that? And of course, this also begs the question, how can PayPal be so anti-MLM and forbid any business with MLM companies when their parent company is eBay? They're owned by eBay. I mean, obviously eBay is an anti-MLM. I mean, this industry moves tens of thousands of dollars worth of product through eBay, probably on a, I would guess, a weekly basis at least. I remember, I think it was June of 07, some anti-MLM zealot out there actually did a survey of resellers of USANA product on eBay and found that in that 1 month, the top five resellers of a whole long list of resellers of USANA product, the top five did over $13,000 in sales. And ironically, by the way, this was to prove that there is no end-user, non-distributor market for their products. So he showed where there was $13,000 of product sold to what would be non-distributor end-users of actually what would have been at least 1 year old product, aged product. It would have to be that, because why would anyone resell their inventory on eBay when they could just return it to USANA for 100% or 90% refund, as is the case with most network marketing companies. So it would have to have been beyond the refund period, so it's aged product, and yet they were still paying a premium price, by the way, for product, and these were just people that wanted the product. But the point here is that eBay moves probably over a year, millions of dollars of product from our industry, from our products, people offering even the opportunities I've seen many times on eBay, and those listings seem to last forever. So obviously they're pro-MLM, so how can their subsidiary be so anti-MLM? Well, it's because anyone who thinks that is wrong. eBay is even more anti-MLM than PayPal is. I'm reading right now from the current policies. You can go online and look at this right now. eBay has very similar distinctions between network marketing companies, just like PayPal did. Some of it even looks like it was copied verbatim, but they go even further. Some of the examples that they give of what is their prohibited content, of any, you know, things you can advertise and auction off on eBay, are multi-level marketing companies, pyramid schemes, and matrix programs. Again, for some reason, they create a distinction. I don't know what a matrix program would be if it's not a pyramid or a multi-level marketing program. But anyway, here's their actual definition. I'm quoting, "This includes any business in which a person receives proceeds from both his or her own sales as well as those of recruited members, not personal purchases or not from recruitment, from the actual sale of product." They even, again, acknowledge that that can happen. It still meets their definition of an MLM. It's still prohibited. There's an extra link here, too, where you can click on it, where it says, "Why does eBay have this policy?" That was a good question, so I clicked on that. You're not going to believe what it said. You can go online right now, go to eBay, check this out. I'm not making this up. Okay, I'm quoting now. "eBay urges its sellers and buyers to comply with all governmental laws and regulations. Since multi-level marketing, pyramid, matrix, and similar programs are illegal, regulated, or may cause harm to eBay or its members, sellers may not list them." Well, multi-level marketing is not illegal. Again, all 50 states on a federal level for 72, almost 73 years, and in 80 countries. It's not illegal. It is not regulated. A lot of people think it should be, but it's not. Whether you like it or not, whether you agree with that or not, whether you're pro-MLM, anti-MLM, it's simply not. It's verifiably not. "Or may cause harm to eBay or its members." If you take that to its logical extreme, every eBay seller could potentially cause harm. So where do you draw that line? I mean, sure, network marketing, I mean, could some of them be pyramids in disguise? Could some of them be overzealous and, you know, make crazy claims and stuff? Yeah, there's certainly some issues that I have with the packaging of network marketing opportunities, and I've always felt that. That's where kind of the tough love comes in. But the content of that packaging, the actual business model, you know, it can also save you from bankruptcy. It can also save your life as opposed to causing harm. So, again, folks, that's eBay, you know, where we're doing a lot of business with. And again, there are MLM companies out there that are doing, have these kind of relationships now with PayPal as well, too. And I wonder if they know that PayPal and their parent company, eBay, feels this way about the service that they're using there. All the MLM company owners out there, you guys who are leaders in this business selling your tapes and tools, are using PayPal? Think about that. Think about their opinion and their parent company's opinion of us. Keep that in mind. I mean, it's fascinating to me that companies like Verizon and PayPal and eBay, you know, I mean, this industry was good enough for Gillette, huge, you know, billion-dollar corporation. I mean, they had an MLM division called Jafra. Colgate-Palmolive, good enough for Colgate-Palmolive. They started Prince's House. That was MLM. U.S. Sprint, MCI. U.S. Sprint actually had an MLM division called Network 2000. MCI has been sold through several network marketing companies. Pampered Chef, Warren Buffett purchased Pampered Chef. By the way, that's the only MLM company he ever purchased. All the other stuff is just urban legend. But still, good enough for Warren Buffett, but not good enough for Verizon or PayPal. Richard Branson, Virgin Records or Virgin Atlantic Airways, has something called Virgin Via at Home, VIE, a network marketing company. Sara Lee used to own House of Sara Lee, which was a network marketing company, and they eventually sold that to Tupperware, a network marketing company. Time Warner, Southern Living at Home, that was the name of their MLM division. Citigroup owns Prime America. Good enough for all these companies, but not good enough for Verizon or PayPal. Facebook, what about Facebook? Oh, by the way, I forgot one. LinkedIn. Anybody out there using LinkedIn? LinkedIn also has an advertising policy in which they include illegal drugs, weapons, firearms, ammunition, sexual adult content, blah, 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 hate and violence groups and organizations, multi-level marketing programs, scams, or pyramid schemes. That's one of the bullet points in their list within their direct ads guidelines. Okay, multi-level marketing programs, out, 100%. That's LinkedIn, folks. You got business with LinkedIn, and you're a network marketer, might want to know that. But, what about Facebook? Because, see, Facebook, we all are doing a lot of business with, I think, in this industry. I'm part of a group that's a very good community of network marketers on Facebook. It's one of the several I'm in. And we frequent that particular service a lot in this industry. Are they a fan of us? Well, according to their prohibited content, and I'm reading from it directly, they have same thing, ammunition, firearms, tobacco products, scams, illegal activities, or pyramid schemes and chain letters. Well, that's fine. That's one whole bullet. Inflammatory religious content. They get into some pretty also kind of gray areas as far as First Amendment, politically religious agendas, and or any known associations with hate criminal and or terrorist activities. Well, I can get the terrorist activity and hate organization part, but politically religious agendas? Or how about political content that exploits political agendas or uses hot-button political issues for commercial use regardless of whether the advertiser has a political agenda? Doesn't the First Amendment or freedom... I don't agree with that personally, but, I mean, doesn't that kind of come into play there for sure? Don't we have the right to do that? Anyway, I just wonder, who at Facebook has that power to basically rewrite the Constitution? Who's sitting at that cubicle at Facebook that decides what content falls into any of these categories? That's got to be a powerful position to be in. But I like this one here. Get rich quick, in quotes, and other money-making opportunities that offer compensation for little or no investment, including money-making schemes positioned as alternatives to part-time or full-time employment. Now, in that bullet point, they've pretty much said multi-level marketing in every possible way without saying multi-level marketing. If you offer compensation with little or no investment, or relatively speaking, compared to $1 million for a McDonald's franchise or something, a few hundred dollars for a kit and some inventory and some sales aids, it's a pretty small investment. Do we position this as an alternative to part-time or full-time employment? Eventually, of course we do. So how do we not apply to that bullet point? Well, I asked Facebook, and their response back was, I told them I wanted to submit an ad for a network marketing company, a multi-level marketing company. Would you accept it? And they responded back and said, send us the ad and we'll tell you. And I wrote them back and I said, didn't really answer my question, before I take the time and the expense and the effort to produce an ad and send it to you. Based on this policy, it appears as if you have an across-the-board prohibition against network marketing companies. Is that true, yes or no? And their response back was no. That they take it on a case-by-case basis, they do accept advertising for some multi-level marketing companies. So they kind of hedged. I think they know that we're very, you know, they're very popular within the network marketing industry. But I would really like to know if anyone out there has ever put that to the test. Because that's easy for them to say, you know, to kind of stay on our good side. But has a network marketing company or even a distributor ever submitted an advertisement to Facebook and had it accepted? We know, obviously, they accept our groups, you know, to have discussions in. But an advertisement, I wonder if they actually would accept one. Has anyone ever seen one? Let me know. By the way, before we leave the subject of Facebook, you all might have heard the thing that went out here earlier this week about, it was all over the internet, that Facebook goes MLM. And I thought that would be kind of ironic if everything that I just read, if suddenly Facebook were to go MLM, especially considering, you know, one of the most elaborate like pages on Facebook is a Verizon page, and there's a big Verizon community on Facebook. Facebook and Verizon just kind of teamed up with Microsoft to work together. I'm thinking like, and oh, by the way, I forgot to mention this too. There's a company out there, this is really ironic, called Lightyear Network Solutions. It's a technology company that I got a press release from Verizon. Okay, Verizon Wholesale Mobility Solutions is the name of the service. This is generated from them. The press release is talking about how their first VPS client is Lightyear Network Solutions. Then Verizon also announced that Lightyear Network Solutions will begin selling Verizon wireless cell phone and mobile broadband services in, they started doing that actually middle of last year. Lightyear Network Solutions is a network marketing company, folks. Now, I wonder if anybody at Lightyear Network Solutions knows that Verizon considers them to be pretty much in the same category as pedophilia and cannibalism. So I'm going to try contacting somebody there and maybe Sven get an idea if they know that's the kind of relationship they've just created with a company that seems to have that opinion of them. Because it's all over. I mean, go to Google right now and Google Verizon goes MLM, in quotes. Yeah, you get dozens or hundreds of hits depending on which service that you use. Yeah, Verizon goes MLM, even though Verizon basically thinks you know, we're the same thing as terrorist organizations, apparently according to the list of bullet points. But anyway, Facebook going MLM didn't happen. I read more red flags were sticking out of that thing than a Russian parade. I knew there had to be a catch. There was. Facebook had nothing to do with it. is some people were using Facebook to make an MLM deal out of it. They were trying to use their chat-to-text feature. They're going to charge $6 a month for it and then put $2 to the sponsor and take the other $2 and pay it down several levels. Yeah, no, that was completely in violation of Facebook's policy. I've read Facebook's policy on this. It just it violates it every which way, but it's amazing that they've actually thought they were going to get away with it. The update that came out, by the way, I think it was it Tuesday night, about 9 o'clock at night, they shut them down. It said, the announcement came up on the website they were using to promote this scheme. It said, don't worry, everyone, that paid already. Well, you'll still get paid as per our agreement. Not that you're going to get your money back. You're still going to get paid per our agreement. I see. So now you're going to keep exchanging cash even though there's no product. So now you're just a, what my friend Kevin Grimes likes to refer to, the MLM attorney. He's the first I heard refer to this anyway, a flaming pyramid. That means you're like completely a pyramid. There's no product at all. You just gave us a bunch of money. We're going to pay it out in the comp plan and there's no product. It's just an exchange of cash. So I'm not really sure they wanted to publicly announce that. They're going to keep doing that. I think they'd just give them all their money back. But anyway, but let's get this back on track and back up and running. They say this is a way for all of us to make money. But forget about the product. They're just saying this is how we could all make money. As you all know, MLM is legal and MLM works. This was exploding and Facebook may have even been threatened by us, they say. Well, yeah, when you're using their trademark and their name and you're accepting credit card information and you're gathering other personal information all through the Facebook program and you didn't get their knowledge or consent to do any of this and you violated, you know, literally probably 15 different policies, Facebook is probably a little upset by that. So, folks, Facebook did not go MLM. That's over. I don't expect it's going to be coming back. For the record, before we get to Y2B Travel and wrap this segment of Inside Network Marketing up, MySpace, Twitter, both of them MLM-friendly. Nothing in there against MLM. In fact, it's interesting. MySpace didn't even have a prohibition against pyramid schemes. They had another bullet point for the list of a whole bunch of stuff they prohibited. Didn't even put pyramid schemes in there, let alone network marketing. But I thought at least pyramid schemes would have been in there. Yahoo, Google, of course they're MLM-friendly. We advertise on them like crazy. Of course, most of the advertisements, unfortunately, are anti-MLM ads by pro-MLMers. But that's a subject for another entire show coming up, but not today. But the time I got left in the hopes of keeping this under an hour, which at this point is pretty much shot, but because I don't come up to a hard break, that's radio lingo for a time when I have to get off the air and the music comes up and I just get cut off in mid-sentence, which I did a few times in my old show as I rambled on. This is a podcast and go as long as I want, but I really will promise to try to keep this as short as I can. Y2B Travel. Now, this was something I've been somewhat critical of them in some of the alerts I've published in the past. And I want to say for the record right up front, just so there's full disclosure, I am not an investor in YTB stock, long or short. I don't own put options. I'm not a distributor or an ex-distributor for this company. I am not a distributor for a competing travel company. I have no vested interest in this company in any way whatsoever. Also, I just want to state, and make this very clear right up front, that I suspect that no one ever designed YTB Travel to be an illegal pyramid scheme. The way that it was constructed is just screaming for legal scrutiny. But I have a theory, and that's all it is at this point, that somewhere very early on in the process, back when it was probably just a gleam in somebody's eye and some notes on a notepad somewhere, and they first got some legal counsel in that development stage, I believe I know who that legal counsel was, and I, in my opinion, believe that that legal counsel is incompetent and misled them into believing that their model was legally sound. Or if they'd already created it, at least misled them into believing that they didn't have to change anything. And again, just my opinion, but I think that these very well could be good, honest guys that at this point are painted into a corner, and if they take out what is the legally suspect part of the plan, which is paying commissions on things other than travel, basically sales aids and websites that only distributors would purchase, I'll get into this more in a minute, you'd rip out basically the guts of the plan. That's where most of the money is made, and so they have no choice but to try to defend it in some way, and in the best way that they possibly can. Otherwise, they pretty much don't have a network marketing company anymore, which I think is one of the reasons why they're kind of looking at going into a franchise option and some other directions. They're adding more kind of like tangible consumable products to it and those kind of things. There's some reasons for that, because I just don't think their current business model is going to withstand scrutiny. And there's all kinds of stuff, rumors and stuff going back and forth that's completely misleading and incorrect about what just happened recently, because both sides are claiming victory in a hearing that was a few weeks ago, when actually it's both sides lost, essentially. I'm going to try to, any lawyers out there listening to me, I know I'm going to overly simplify this. I'm just trying to keep it simple in layman's terms. But what happened a few weeks ago is there was a hearing where YTB Travel tried to get the California case. There's also by the AG of Illinois. Their home state is investigating them too, which is also dangerous. I kind of liken it like your home state AG is like the head, and all the other states are like your arms and legs. And now California, by the way, is kind of like your heart. I mean, you can't really survive without California either. But most of the time, if you get shut down in a particular state, you can still survive. But when your home state gets you, you're kind of like cutting off the head. So I would be a little more concerned actually about anything going on in Illinois than I would California at this point. But it kind of looks like Illinois is sort of sitting back, probably waiting to see what California is going to do at this point. No sense duplicating the effort. So what happened a few weeks ago was that YTB Travel tried to get the whole thing just dismissed, and California tried to get a TRO, a temporary restraining order, or some kind of temporary order to at least shut them down, and they both didn't get what they wanted, and the judge said, in September, we're going to have a hearing, and we're going to go to trial, and we're going to fight this out. So that's what's going to happen in September. I think that if YTB prevails in this, and the smoke clears, and they pretty much have the same comp plan, it's going to really completely rewrite MLM legal precedent. Now, there are no, I can't say MLM law, because there are no MLM laws. The FTC doesn't have an MLM law on the book, or states don't. They have anti-pyramid laws and anti-lottery laws, and we have a lot of legal precedent. We have a lot of different cases we can look at over time to see how we distinguish certain things, like, you know, what percentage of product is moved, and I don't want to get off on a big long tangent here, because we're already going to go over time, but this whole thing about, I'm hearing all over the place, now the FTC requires that 50% of your product be sold to non-distributors or you're a pyramid scheme, is completely BS. I'll do a whole segment on that in a future show, but that's not the case. In fact, the DSA wrote a letter to the FTC asking for some guidance on this personal consumption issue. Six states have already they've rang in on this and already said personal consumption by distributors is a legal bona fide sale and is legally commissionable. Most of the other states are just moot on it. But the FTC wrote back in this January 04 letter to the DSA, a link of which is on the website at markwaveinc.com in the research links section of my website. You can read the letter where they say, we don't go by any particular percentage of product being purchased by distributors, and I'm paraphrasing, but they go by the motive for buying the product. Okay, if you're buying a little bit of product, but just as a token act to meet a quota in the comp plan, and you're throwing it in the garage, then you're probably a pyramid, if that's what most distributors are doing. They could buy a lot more product, but if it's because they genuinely want it, they really like the product, or they're actually trying to resell it to somebody, then it's not. But if most of the product being sold to distributors, if that's more than 50%, but it's because they actually want it, and we know that's the case in many companies. I mean, some distributors out there are fanatical about their product. They'll never stop ordering it, you know, regardless of what happens in the business. So those are companies that, again, most of the products would be sold to distributors, and it's perfectly fine. In the case of YTB Travel, if we look back at their, they're a publicly traded company, so we can look back at their audited financials every year, and in 2007, 2008, I only got the first three quarters, the first 9 months of the year so far. They haven't come out with their fourth quarter data yet. But in 2007, they said they did $414 million in travel bookings, in actual sales of travel. The airline tickets, the cruise line tickets, all of that totaled $414 million, which sounds like a really big number, right? That's a lot of travel. Well, here's the first problem with that. The actual commissions paid to distributors on the travel in 2007 was $13,426,000, and a little bit more than that. But the actual commissions earned by YTB Travel was $20,495,000. Now, let me make clear what I'm saying here. The commission portion was about 65.5% of all the commissions that YTB Travel paid. They paid 65.5% of that back to the field. Okay, they brought in about $20.5 million. They paid out about $13.5 million. That's 65%. Most network marketing companies are paying 45%, 50%. That's a pretty high payout. Sounds great, doesn't it? Except The $20.5 million that YTB received is your typical agency commission on the $414 million in travel. In other words, it's not 65.5% payout on $414 million of actual travel. It's on the commission that YTB Travel earned on that travel. In other words, they're a travel agency, essentially. So all the airlines, the cruises, the hotels, they paid YTB Travel about 5% commission on that $414 million, 4.95% actually. So the distributors earned 65.5% of 5% of the $414 million. So you're actually getting a very small single-digit percentage payout, not 45 or 50% like most MLM companies, and certainly not 65.5% of the actual travel. The actual commissions earned on travel, per distributor, was minutely small. By the way, the commission YTB Travel earned in 06 was 3.3%. Of all the travel that was booked, they were paid 3.3% of it, of which they then used to pay out 60-something percent of it back to the field in commission. So clearly, there isn't a lot of money in the actual travel. So to compensate for that, they charge for the website, the travel booking website, which is $449, plus there's a sign-up fee, there's $149 training, there's about $50 a month you got to pay to maintain it. Again, all things only distributors would purchase, or what they call RTAs, or they might call them reps, or anyway, only someone in the business would purchase. You can't mark these up and resell them to non-distributors. There's no realistic possible way you would take this website and sell it to someone who's not in the business. The website you're booking the travel through is essentially a sales aid. It's like a Zengo or USANA or Shackley or Amway, anybody that has a self-replicating website in these companies, obviously you can't make those websites commissionable. They're to help you sell the actual product. Here the actual product is travel. These are the websites you use to book the travel through. So in 07, the total revenue to the company from the travel store and the monthly fee, they actually call it a travel store, was a little under $104 million. Now that's income to YTB Travel. I mean, they only made $20 million in the travel commissions. They made over $103 million selling the stores and the monthly fees. Another $14 million from training and marketing materials. They then paid out to the field $80,550,000. That was the marketing commissions from the websites, from the actual business. Right, about 78% payout. Again, that sounds great, except it's not on travel. It's not on an actual product. Now, the first 9 months of 08, I'm going to guess, since it was 3.3% in 06, 4.95 in 07, I'm going to optimistically assume, let's say, they earned a 5.5% commission on all the travel, since it keeps going up. So I would project out at somewhere around $535 million will be the actual travel bookings for the entire year of 08 when this is all said and done. Again, that's just a projection. But for the first 9 months of the year, total revenue into the company from their travel commissions was about $22 million, of which $16 million they paid out to the field. But they paid $66.3 million in commissions out in marketing commissions. In other words, of all the commissions they've paid out to the field, about 80% of it came from the sales aids. About 20% of it came from travel. The travel commission payout, again, is about 73% first 9 months of this year, but that's 73% of 5.5% of the travel. So again, the vast majority of the money and the vast majority of revenue into the company is coming from the sale of the website and the monthly fees, in other words, from what distributors are paying to get into the business. The travel store and the monthly fees, first 9 months of this year, they've made almost $98 million from that. So again, that's 75% of their total revenue. Three-fourths of their revenue is not coming in from travel. It's coming in from selling the store you booked the travel through. So I won't get into all the detail here. I'm probably already getting too technical. But the actual travel commission payout, the 73% of the 5.5%, assuming it was even that high, is about 4%. So their payout, whereas other companies are paying 45, 50%, they're paying 4%. Total payout to the field on the travel. So the vast majority of income is coming from the website. Now, why is that a problem? Well, again, only distributors would purchase it. You must recruit more people into the business to make money from this. And there is legal precedent here. There's other travel companies in the past, TravelMax, World Class Network, New Concepts in Travel. There's have been companies like BigSmart, KM.net, Both of those companies were shut down for being pyramid schemes, and what they were shopping malls. Okay, you went to a website, and it had a bunch of affiliate programs with Sears and Barnes & Noble and travel companies, but a whole bunch of different companies you could buy things through, books, CDs, whatever you wanted to order. It was a shopping mall, they called it, an internet mall. Well, very little volume was ever actually ordered through all those shopping malls, and even then, you know, these companies earned a 5, 10, 15% affiliate fee, which, of course, they would keep part of that and put the rest of it into the compensation plan. So there was no money in that. Where the money was the $399 fee for the shopping mall, the website, the sales aid you used to try to sell all these actual products through. They'd pay big commissions on that. That is exactly why they were deemed illegal pyramids, because the vast majority of money was coming from something only distributors would purchase, not from the actual product they were in the business of selling. Now, if we render that down, let's say we remove everything from that shopping mall, as all the different products you can order, the books, the CDs, everything was gone, and you leave just travel, wouldn't that be even worse, like more legally suspect? Another great way to kind of look at a network marketing company is to ask the question, can the last person in still realistically make money? Okay, with no downline, is there still a realistic way, or at least is it possible for them to still make money? Now, when you get into what they call a pills and potions company, in other words, a tangible consumable product company, well, the last person in could buy the product, mark it up, and resell it. So there's still a way to make money. You don't have to recruit to make more money. Now, can the last person in YTB Travel make money as a marketing rep, as an RTA, as someone selling this business, the website, the marketing website? Now, a lot of times when I ask this question, I've done it privately a few times, I get this comeback. Well, they sell the travel. They can still make money on the travel. The last person in can. That's fine, and I have no problem with the travel. Paying commissions on the travel is perfectly fine. But just because you pay legal commissions on something doesn't give you the right to pay what could potentially be deemed illegal commissions on something else. The analogy I use here is if you owned a pharmacy and 99.9% of your sales are legal over-the-counter drugs and legal prescription drugs, and the 0.1% of your sales is crack cocaine, that doesn't make it legal for you to sell crack cocaine. Now, in this case, we got it completely flipped. The vast majority of money is coming from the legally suspect thing, and only a small portion of it is coming from travel, which I have no problem with. If it was just travel, that's fine. But how does the last person in, without mandatory recruitment of another distributor, make money from the booking website? You can't do it. You must recruit. It's the only possible way for that volume to ever occur, for anyone to ever make money. Again, in spite of all these legal precedences, and in spite of the fact the vast majority is coming from recruiting, clearly from recruiting, in fact, one thing about YTB Travel and their management and the way that they've worded things, and again, why I think they have not gotten proper legal counsel, there's no way a competent legal counsel has reviewed their marketing material and their descriptions of things, or if they have, then it is their responsibility for not heeding the advice of competent legal counsel, one or the other. I'll concede it could be either one. But like, for example, I'm looking at the YTB team structure and copyrighted compensation plan. By the way, copyrighted compensation plan. They actually are acting like a copyrighted compensation plan and somehow protects it. It just protects the words you've used to describe it. Okay, it doesn't protect anyone else from copying the compensation plan. And again, another tangent for another day, but you can't patent a compensation plan. Most compensation plans out there, you'll notice, will say patent pending. You can apply for a patent for anything. It doesn't mean you're going to get it. You can't patent a compensation plan. Okay, you can't patent a concept. Imagine you can patent a concept, but not a concept for a compensation plan. Imagine, say you sold, Xerox copiers, and you decided I'm going to pay a 15% commission to all of my salespeople. But if my salespeople could get any of their personal friends and family to refer business to them, like a second tier sort of a thing, well, we're going to pay them an extra 20% to give them an incentive to go out there and do some word-of-mouth marketing and network it. So it's 15% if you sell it, but if you can get referrals from others, we'll pay you 20% on that. That's it. Simple little compensation system. Could they patent that so no other copier company could ever use that compensation system to pay their people? Of course they can't. That's absurd. So anyway, you can copyright it. You can trademark it. You can't patent a compensation plan. By the way, I'm not saying YTB Travel is trying to patent their compensation plan. They're bragging about the fact that they were copywriting it. That was just the patent thing was just an irrelevant tangent I went on. So anyway, I'm reading this, and it says, how do I get paid on my power team? And I'm reading a bullet point here. $50 direct sales commission on personally enrolled affiliates. Not from the sales, not from travel sales, not from the sales of some product you're in the business of selling. You get $50 on personally enrolled affiliates. They flat out tell you, you get paid for enrolling affiliates. They're not even trying to hide it with coy little clever language like a lot of companies try to do. So it is something that I think is probably, in my opinion, if I were to make a prediction, is not going to bode well for Y2B Travel. I think it's going to be very challenging when they have their lawsuit addressed, or California's Attorney General's lawsuit in September. And I believe what will most likely happen is Y2B Travel will not go out of business. I think they are going to metamorphosize into something very, very different than what they are today. They'll basically have, I think, two choices. Either keep fighting it and just have to take the compensation of selling sales aids and distributor-only, you know, business-related stuff out of the comp plan and die a natural death of attrition, because there's not going to be any money left in it, or change into something else, a franchise model, add some more tangible consumable products to the line, or whatever they're going to do, but they're just not going to be able to stay the way they are right now. I just don't see, with the legal precedent behind it and the cut and dry, crystal clear definitions that we have of what you can pay and not pay commissions on, don't see how they can survive this. Now, there's a whole, this by the way, is only the first layer of the onion that is Y2B Travel. There's a lot of stuff deeper than this, involving some in-house stuff that went on with one of their in-house attorneys and his history and his history with them, and a lot of stuff that has been made public about it. Tons of contradictions I found as far as definitions of what he believes are legal or illegal pyramid schemes. I don't really have time anymore to get into any of that. Plus, when I'm going to go after someone individually like that, I'd rather them just come on the show and we discuss it. So I'm going to make the overture for this man to come on the show, and I'll address them directly to him if he should choose not to. And knowing him, because I've had contact with him in the past, I've had experience even working with him in the past, I suspect he will be willing to. He seems to be open to that kind of thing, so we'll see if I can make that happen. If not, then I'll just I'll tell you what I know. It'll just be me. But anyway, that's the I wanted to get into more detail with a lot more descriptions and examples than I could ever have gotten to in an alert to try to make people understand really what my concern is here with YTB, because I've gotten a lot of questions and emails about, you know, why I believe what I believe about them. So there it is. And like I said, I'm sure there'll be a lot more to this story as well too, and I'll keep you posted on it. And by the way, I just also want to just state for the record that before I published my previous alerts with any kind of commentary about YTB Travel, I did make an asserted effort to get a response from YTB Corporate, as I do with every company that I ever say anything negative about. I always try to get, like I said, their side of the story first and contact them in advance of my publishing that. I did make that attempt. The only response that I got was from one of their senior corporate people who said he was referring my questions to another senior corporate person, who of course never got back to me. But they did on more than one occasion have the opportunity to respond to a list of questions and concerns that I had sent them. I would like to at least, though, acknowledge Marcia Dempsey, their director of public relations. In of course, whatever limited way that she is, she certainly can't give me the same information that corporate does, but she has indulged some of my questions and concerns in the past and answered them at least as best as she could, and she is very responsive, so I do at least want to acknowledge that, that at least she's tried. Anyway, that's the end of the first segment of Inside Network Marketing. Know it was a little rough and too many ums and you knows, and I'm going to be continuing to work on that. The next show, which I'm hoping every couple of weeks I can keep these coming out, or at least on an as-needed basis as more information comes out. There's just so much stuff I still want to talk about, so I'll probably just wrap this one up and produce it and get right to work on the next one. But let me know, what topics do you want me to cover on this show? What guests would you like to have come into the kitchen? What kind of questions would you like to ask those people? So you guys be my eyes and ears. There's only so much information I can gather. I got a lot of information gathering mechanisms here. But you all tell me, what do you hear out there that's going on? What would you like more information about? I can't respond, obviously, personally to all of them, but just let me know. Keep them coming in. You can email me directly to sitefeedback@cox.net. So that's site, SITEfeedback@cox.net. That's actually where the feedback is received for the entire website. It'll work for these podcasts as well, too. So email me there and let me know what you think. So that's the end of the first segment of Inside Network Marketing. And finally, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up for this week. And thank you all for indulging me for this longer than normal show. I kind of figured the first one would be a little bit long, but I'll really try to keep these under an hour in the future. But thank you all for hanging in there for the whole show. And I appreciate it. And I'll see you all next time. Have a great week.